everyone. Welcome to the Coaches on the Run podcast.
This is Alex.
And Alyssa.
We're both full-time coaches, and we're here to answer your common and not-so-common trail and ultra questions.
Hi, everyone. So we are super excited to have the Coaches on the Run podcast with Alex and myself, Alyssa, as well as my cat. I apologize. And teaming up with one of our favorite podcasts out there, the Trail Running Women podcast with Hillary. So Hillary, can you tell us a bit of a background of why we're here and what we're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I just want to say whatever just happened before the starting of that recording was unbelievable. I nominated Alex and then she just tag team you and things switched, and that teamwork that you guys have is pretty amazing. So I'm so excited to be here with both of you. As you mentioned, I'm the host of the Trail Running Women podcast. Both of you guys have been guests on my show, and both of those episodes were so well received. So I was so stoked to find out that you guys teamed up as well. And I was just thinking, like, I am now at 138 guests, I think, and that I've learned so much from these guests and various things. And I know you guys talk to so many cool people and have had so many amazing conversations that I thought we could team up and talk about the top five things that we've all learned from either each other or guests or listening to each other's podcasts. And then it would be just kind of a fun little recap before Alex takes a brief mat leave. I assume she's taking a little bit of time. So yeah, that's why we're here.
Yeah. So we've been recording a few extra episodes. So hopefully we don't have any huge gaps. Or, you know, if Alyssa needs to just talk to herself for an hour, I have faith that she's capable and you can take that, good or bad. No.
Sounds narcissistic, but like, sure, let's go for it. Also, I have faith that Alex is going to be like, oh, I just pushed out a baby, but tomorrow I have a podcast. So like, fuck it, I'm going to go for it.
You know, that I mean, maybe. It's nice because it makes you feel kind of normal. I had one where I had to like do an interview with Baker feeding. And so you could hear him eating a little bit in the background, but it was out of that or him crying. And somebody's like, it was really distracting that your baby was suckling. And I was like, well, sorry that my 5-day old is freaking eating while I'm trying to talk to you. But anyways, that's my brief rant. Number one thing I learned, do what you need to do with the baby.
Yeah, that's kind of my plan.
So Hillary, with that, do you want to kick us off on your first one? So kind of the format that we're going to do is we each have our top five. We're going to say them, and then each of us will weigh in, hopefully relatively quickly, but probably not going to happen. So Hillary, why don't you kick us off?
Sure. Hold on a tick, guys. I'm going to go back to where I wrote my top five. Hopefully. Okay, there we go. Okay, the first thing that I learned from not just one guest, but multiple guests, was that nobody else cares how fast you run. And I don't mean that in like a snotty way. I mean it in a way that's like, trail running is different from road running in that sense, where it's not about pace as much as it is just this shared adventure and getting to the finish line, however that looks. And then if you win the race, people are stoked for you because you won, and that's awesome. But if you come in last, people have the same amount of enthusiasm. And equally, if I'm talking to a new trail runner, they don't like me more or give me more value as a human if my 50K time is super fast or if my 50K time is super slow. They just think it's cool that I'm out there in the forest and that they can relate. And I just found that was such a peace of mind in trail running, or it gave me such peace of mind and made me so excited about the sport, because you can be so competitive with yourself and of course in races, but that's not where your value as a runner comes from. And I think that's pretty unique to trail running. So that is my number one.
Love it. I totally agree. We just had this conversation yesterday with the guest, but like, no one cares. Also, if you go out in the real world, they're like, I'm sorry, you ran how far? And if they ask you what your pace is, they clearly have no idea what that means. So that's awesome. Alex?
Yeah, I think that's my favorite thing about trail running in general. is that it kind of takes away a lot of the ego. And I think it, in doing that, it opens the door for like reflection and personal growth a little bit more. That's pretty similar to a few of the things that I had put as some of my top takeaways too. So I think that's always an important lesson to continue to remember, especially as we tend to be more competitive driven people when we choose running. So I think that's a lesson to keep relearning.
Yeah, I think that was a really good point, Alyssa, what you said too, that like nobody in the outside world can understand. So the pace doesn't matter to them at all. And people that are runners understand why, obviously terrain and climbing and all that stuff. So do you want to go next with your first one?
Yeah, absolutely. This one's kind of a downer, but I promise my last one is an upper. So again and again, disordered eating is unbelievably prevalent and problematic in this world. Like, it breaks my heart how many times we interview both male and female. Like, it is not just female. And they have either, spent so much of their life struggling with it, are still struggling with it, have felt that their self-worth was so attached to that, and felt like it was necessary to be successful in the running world. And I do think that we're making a lot of progress getting away from that. But it just breaks my heart of every time I feel like I need to put a disclaimer on just so many of our episodes, because it's so prevalent of like, it's of like trigger warnings of like, we talk about this and it comes up all the time. So that just, that it bums me out so much. And I will 100% say, like, I fall into this category too, and have struggled with disordered eating for a long time. And like, it sucks. So I love that we're talking about it. And I hope that in the future, we can move in a direction where this isn't so common.
Yeah, I agree with that, Alyssa, because I feel like even there's been a few podcasts where I have, you wanted a question about nutrition, but I knew the guest. And so I was like, let's not do that question with them, or a conversation with a guest. Like, we started talking about food and I caught a few things that I felt like could be triggering in the conversation. So I was like, oh, let's change the topic. And I just kind of interrupt. So even people that maybe aren't aware, that they might be somewhere on that spectrum of disordered eating, I've noticed, in some of the conversations we've had. And so I'm like, okay, well, this isn't a therapy session, and this definitely isn't a, you know, we don't want to record this person sharing something that's, you know, out of balance or unhealthy for them until they're ready to acknowledge it and, you know, be aware of it. So it's definitely been, it's been something I knew it was prevalent because I've coached nutrition for so long. But I didn't realize, I guess, how prevalent and how common it is for people to have unhealthy relationships with food.
Yeah, I actually, that was one thing that I really appreciated about my interview with you, Alex, is you spoke so like clear-mindedly about wanting to have a baby and that was going to look different from competing in body composition type activities and like looking at the bigger picture of like what we were asking of our bodies at the time, instead of just how it looked, right? Like, which I think relates to what we ask of it when we're running and how much fuel it actually needs to do those things. And I too can say, like, for sure, I have struggled with these things, and I've always tried to figure out like why. And they say it's because we see skinny people on TV and in magazines and think that that's what we have to look like. And I think that's true. But I think that's changing, and that it also comes down to just like calling out the people around us. And I think my parents had a bigger impact on me than they meant to, and not in like a malicious way, but like my mom would look in the mirror and look at herself sideways and like hold in her tummy and be like, oh, I'm on a diet tomorrow. And she's just like talking to herself, like not thinking that through. And then I'm bigger than her. I always have been. So then I look at myself as a young girl and think like, well, if she's big, then like, what's wrong with me? Or like people making comments about like Serena Williams being too big to wear an outfit or something, and being like, wait a minute. That's like one of the best athletes in the world, and we're going to comment on what she looks like. So then as me as a bigger runner, like, am I not allowed to wear shorts to the race? Like, these things that people just say in passing are so internalized. And I think we just have to call each other out on those things and just say, like, hey. And I've had to call out some really naturally thin friends who are like, oh, I feel so fat, and be like, hey, how do you think that makes people that aren't your size feel? Because that puts me in like a tailspin. And equally, saying things like that, and then people who are way bigger than me are going to be like, well, I just, it, like, in a roundabout way, made them feel even worse, right? Like, it's just such an ongoing thing that I guess I don't even know where to start. But then, like, I think we're all a part of one of the Facebook groups for running that is for women online. And I saw this mom post with her little girl sitting in the bathtub behind her that was like, I weigh X amount now and I'm this tall and I've run marathons. I want to run 50 miles. So I need to get to my pre-baby weight, which is like a 13 pounds less. And she was super thin. And I thought it had like 200 comments. And I was sure the comments were going to be like, don't do this in front of your daughter, or trail running takes strength. And I wanted to be like, hey, I'm 10 pounds more than you are now, and I've won 50 mile races. But instead it was people being like, cut out your carbs or try Weight Watchers. And I was just like, no. So I guess this rant is like, before we move on, because I think that's such a big topic, do either of you guys, I guess starting with Alyssa, like, if there was one thing you think everybody can do to make this different, what do you think that would be?
Oh, that's a great one. And I saw that post too, and I was like, what the actual fuck? Like, it bothered me so much because she was very thin. And also, I was just like, no, because your life was different back then. And like, being thinner, you're just going to like break yourself. So yeah, that, I'm so glad you brought that up. I think, and I'm also guilty of this, is actually like, I made a post about this of like, the whole thing of like being big for a runner, that changing that sentence and just being like, I'm a runner, I have muscles, it's great. Like, I had my parents-in-law be like, you're really strong for a runner. And I was like super upset by it, which is a messed up, because I shouldn't be upset that I'm like, have some strength. It's what part of what keeps me from getting injured. But also that they felt like they needed to quantify like strong for a runner, whereas like, what's a runner supposed to be? Like, tell me, please. And so I think just continuously trying to be aware of that language and like that idea of what a runner looks like. And I think we're progressing in that regard, but I still think that phrase and just like that mindset just is a bit soul-sucking.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a formula of how to change that narrative, but I think having discussions about it helps. I had, you know, those moments where you're so excited, you're kind of like jumping around and squealing. Like, I had one of those moments the other night, and at least I hope I'm not the only person that gets that excited. But my husband and I love watching like British baking shows. I don't know, it's what we've been into for like the last year. And we were watching this show that's new to us. It was like, I don't even know the name of it. It's not important, because clearly the it needs some work. And so we're watching this show where they take like entrepreneurs and they decide if investing in their, you know, company to start a, you know, a professional restaurant is like worth it. And the commentator was complimenting this like more hippie, fun-loving girl on how well-dressed she was to talk to these investors and how professional she looked. And I thought it was patronizing, but I kind of like skipped over it. And my husband goes, they would never comment about the professionalism of a man just because he put a suit on. They would never tell a man that he looked really attractive and good and professional when he dressed up in his adult clothes. And he got like really upset, and I was like, yes, thank you for seeing that. Because for me, I see that there is, and I know, you know, disordered eating comes on both sides, but I think men tend to be more practical about it, and their approach of having disordered eating is usually less emotional than it is for women. So it was really exciting for me to see my husband is starting to recognize that narrative that's pushed at women, you know, since birth, because it's not his fault, but he's always been a very privileged white male that ticks all the boxes of the most privileged things you can imagine. So it was nice to see him being aware of that. And I think that, not to toot my own horn or anything, but was definitely because for the last several years that we've been together, I've been pointing out those things and now he's seeing them. And I think that would be my only, I think that's the only way we can change the narrative of what things are supposed to be is pointing out when they're wrong. So yeah, I think your method of it is probably the best one I can think of, Hillary.
I love that. And I love, you said it more gently than I did too. And I think you're right. Just like pointing out like, oh yeah, this is weird, isn't it? And then until they start to think about it. And it just takes like those conversations at home. So that's awesome. Anyways, obviously we could talk about that one for forever, but I'll go on to my number two. So this, I had a guest named Natalie.
Sorry, oh, we should, no, I was going to say Alex still has her first one to go, I think.
Oh my God. Yeah, we all are going to talk about it.
I was just going to like throw mine in it. So I think we had one and it was really well phrased. It was on a recording we haven't yet released yet, but it was with both Alyssa and I have a friend, Anna, and she is a phenomenal athlete. And I don't want to share too much of that podcast until we release it, but she said something and it just, like for me, you know, you have those moments, it just like stops time. And that's how I felt. She said that as a woman traveling in America, and we're talking about, she's one of those badass ladies I know. She, you know, is a former Marine and she's super fit and she's super tough. She's extremely strong, does not have the runner style body, as we're calling it, if you will. And she goes, as a woman traveling in America, I never felt safe. And it just kind of like everything stopped for me. And I was like, that's the best summary of where we're at as a country. And Alyssa and I have talked to so many people, different sports. And I think it's, I don't know, it's been expansive for me to realize that the majority of our guests, and not to say white males are lacking in this area, because I think that this is a very situationally dependent position, but a lot of runners don't feel safe. And that can be, you know, people of color, that can be men, that can be women, but it really just stopped time for me to think like one of the most badass ladies I know never felt safe a single moment when she was traveling in our country. And I think that's a bit of a painful reflection, but I think it's beneficial. You know, and one of my husband's friends that happens to be a tough white male, very stereotypical alpha, you know, he recently got harassed and chased by somebody in a vehicle while he was out for a run. So I'm not saying, you know, people that tend to have more societal privilege don't have those episodes, but I didn't realize how many runners in general feel unsafe. And I think that's maybe something we need to unpack in podcast or start discussing more about ways to find safer routes and running capabilities.
Yeah, I think that's such a good one. And I can say two things. I didn't realize that was quite an issue until I started this podcast and started to talk to more runners from different places, because I can say that I've always felt pretty safe in Canada and in Vancouver. But I know that that's also just part of my personality, because there are a lot of crazy things going on up here, and I think we need to do a better job of it too. And it might have been just the small town I grew up in that just didn't ever feel threatening. But there was a post actually from a newspaper article yesterday that said Vancouver is awesome. From a newspaper place called Vancouver is Awesome. And it was, the headline was something along the lines of, things women in Vancouver are doing to avoid violence or to save themselves from violence or something. And Tori, my co-host, her response was, okay, and what steps are the attackers taking? And everyone was like, oh yeah. And I think you're right. Like, it's something that we need to unpack more, instead of being like, okay, well, like, dress appropriately and carry your knife, or for some states, like I know people are carrying guns, which to me is fucking mind blowing. But like, what are we doing to change the people that are doing the attacking? Like, it's just such a loaded question. So, yeah, that was a great one. Thank you.
Yeah, I will say I also, because I was the one who was like leading into the question with Anna of, did you feel safe? Because I wanted to know, because I was like, man, she's so bold and like strong for doing what she did, like traveling the US. And when she said that, I was like, oh, wow. Because, yup, I completely feel her. And that's really interesting, too. So I spent 2 years in Italy and I never felt unsafe in Italy. Like, I've always felt totally safe and knew that, like, probably the worst thing that was going to happen to me is an old man, like, honking his horn at me. Which, not that I'm saying that should be allowed, but, like, I didn't feel physically threatened at all. When I moved to the U.S., I was immediately like, I feel in danger a lot, like, most of the time. And I carry pepper spray with me. And I'm planning this big run hike thing, near my area, and I will fully admit that I am concerned because there's this dude who supposedly like creeped on many women, like kidnapped some, supposedly raped some, and he may be in the area. And I'm like, do I just not do this? And then I'm like, that is so messed up that I might feel so unsafe by this one horrible man who should be in prison that I'm not going to do this. And I have been trying to rectify how to do it in my mind. I think he's not quite in this area, but it's just, it's so common and it sucks and it, brah. Anyway, Hillary, what is your second one?
25 minutes in, we're really doing this. I had a guest, Nat Runs Far on Instagram, who is older than me. She didn't say her age because she doesn't think age matters, but she said, I decided to have a goal to run a marathon faster, and I ran like a 3:07, or it might have even been sub 3. Forgive me, I don't have the actual times. But the important part was that she got to the end, and you know that feeling at the end of a marathon or the end of a 5K when you like redline the whole way where you're just like totally done? And instead of her being like, oh God, that was so hard, she was like, I have more. And that really gave me pause because I was like, whoa. And then she went out and trained harder, and she did have more, and she ran faster. And I have had this like mental block around like a certain 5K time and a certain mile pace for so long that it was like, this is so much mental. And it goes back to like the guy who broke the 4-minute mile in the first place. Like the one guy broke it and then everybody did. And realizing that like you can always improve. Trail, road, whatever it is, there's always room to get better. And that was something that like I really needed to hear.
Yeah, I like that. And I think too, so I have a, I don't know why, but I've always had, the majority of my friends are usually much older than me, or at least a decade older than me. So moving to Big Island a couple years ago, I have collected a very diverse group of friends, but the majority of them are in their 70s. And it's a delight. I just love it. And I learned so much from people that are older than me. But I think that's something I've learned from them as well, is that you can always improve. And if you can't improve, you can reformat what that challenge looks like and find a way to improve. So one of my best friends here, Les, is, I think he's 76, and he is doing his first 100-miler since he's been 70 this year. And so it's been really fun to join him, because now that I'm super pregnant, our pace is very similar and he ends up actually waiting on me quite a bit. But we've been doing long runs together. So we did a 50K, you know, when I was a little bit less pregnant, and we've done, you know, some 20-mile days together because he's all about training for his 100-miler this fall. And it's so cool to see someone in their, you know, later 70s reformatting what a 100-miler looks like. Like, is he going to do the same marathon pace he did when he was 45? Probably not. But now it's a different kind of challenge. And, you know, he has like 4 PhDs and he's like, well, you just never need to stop learning. You need to always challenge yourself. And I think that's part of what keeps him so young. And that's been a fun rabbit hole for me to learn from my friends here.
That makes me smile a lot. I think that's why I love the sport so much. It's like there's something for everyone. And there's some kind of challenge that you can conquer in a different way, where sometimes I feel like the road, and I'm being really pedantic, but like it's limiting in some ways, but trail, it's like, okay, well now I want to be really good at like mountainous 100Ks. And another person's like, well, I want to be a speedster and run like a 3-hour 50K. So like there's so much breadth of challenge. And I think that's just the coolest. That's why I love this sport. Hillary, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say I totally agree, and then I was gonna ask you your number two.
Okay. So my number two, and this is a question I literally cannot tell you how many times I get this question. Is like, how did you run a bunch of marathons? Like, how do you do this type of long distance stuff? How do you train for it? And I'm like, I'm going to give you one word, consistency. So I think with anything, as well as in life with, you know, studying or teaching habits, things like that, is being consistent, because without consistency, you have no base to build on. And so, like I said, I get asked a lot about the marathons, and it's like, because I've consistently been training endurance and building a base since I was probably about like 10 or 11 years old. And it's not something you can just do with, you know, even just a few years or like months or anything. It takes getting out there and doing it. And that's not to say that there aren't seasons in your life where sometimes that's more training and sometimes that's less training, but it's just consistently building that base of endurance to get you where you need to go.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think as a coach, that's something I try to harp on people. But it's been interesting hearing it from all of our podcast guests too. I think that the most successful ones, if we're going to measure success by, you know, race times or races completed, the most athletically, you know, if we can call it successful, people tend to be the ones that are most consistent, not the ones that are most extreme. And so I think that's been an interesting thing for us to hear and hopefully share with the people that are listening, that you don't have to, you know, pack in a 150 mile week with 3 speed workouts, but if you run 40 miles a week consistently all year, you're probably going to be stronger and more capable of hopping into a race whenever.
Yeah, totally agree. That's all I'll say on that. That's always what I say. Consistency goes a long way. Well, it's key, like you said. Alex, what's your number two?
So mine, I think it's common. It's common sense to me, but I think we hear it so often that I hope that if we can share this as like a bit of a highlight reel of most important takeaways from our podcast, much less just our own takeaways, is injuries happen when people push too hard. And I think the first sign of injury is an initial gut reaction of, I don't want to, or I feel tired. And if people could just learn to listen to that first sign, I think injuries would be almost non-existent outside of the random, like you fell off of a cliff or, you know, stepped in a big hole. But I think that's something we've heard so much from all of our guests. Every time injury, the topic of injury and healing and prevention and what they had to overcome came up, it also came up that they were pushing hardest, or they had just PR'd, or they had really upped their training. And it's such a consistent story. But I hope, you know, not to shame anybody at all for getting injured. It's all a part of the process. But I think if I could take that advice and share it with anybody, it would be to listen to those first signs, because time and time again, we hear that same story.
100% agree. And the same thing, and it happens to me, I'm guilty of it, is that like not taking the easy runs easy. So you do your speed work and then like you don't really want to show a X minute mile on Strava. So you run just like a little faster than an easy run, which like kind of fucks you up. And that's how overuse injuries happen. And like you said, the first sign for me too is just feeling like I don't feel like it. And like, that's okay. That doesn't mean you're not a runner. So I like that. I think that's important. And again, like you said, It's a very obvious thing, and yet we need to remind ourselves of that often.
Yeah, and I'm harsh as a coach, so this may knee-jerk a few people, but, you know, I always tell people, like, do you care more about your cardiac health or your Strava? Like, do you want to die at 50 because you impressed people in your 30s? Or do you want to have an extra 5 followers on Strava and have your kids watch you die before they go to college? And when you frame it like that, it makes it really simple and common sense. But people, you know, I'm not the right coach for everybody. I can be a little harsh or a little blunt. But I think sometimes it takes hearing it in that format. Like, do you want to risk your death or do you want to actually be healthy?
If I wasn't muting while you were talking, you would have heard me like laugh and cheer that whole time. So well done. I'm on board with that.
Yeah, I was going to say I am thoroughly enjoying the real talk and I feel like Alex just dropped the mic drop. So I have nothing more to say. I love it. And it makes total sense. Yeah. I also it's why I don't really look at Strava. I have it. It exists. It uploads. And I used to spend a lot of time on it. Now I'm like, nah, don't need that negativity in my life. I just don't need to compare myself. All right. Alex, did you want to add something or should we go on to Hillary?
Oh, no. I was just going to ask Hillary if she's got time, if we can do her third takeaway.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
13 more minutes.
Yeah, we're crushing this. I'm loving what you guys are saying so much. I'm stoked to edit this for sure, just to listen back to it. Okay, so you actually touched on this a bit. I can't remember which one of you it was, but somebody who's doing the 100 miler. This is something we can do and enjoy in our 70s. And like so many of the sports I played are things that have an ending. And I love like, and I've got clients in their 50s and I'm just learning like, and this goes to the what you just talked about with trying to run and be impressive now, like, no, I want this to be adding to my life when I'm 70, literally, and spending time in the forest. And like, that just makes me excited and it gives me reason to slow down and enjoy this and treat my body in a way that means that I get to play in the mountains for my whole life. And I just can't think of anything better.
Yeah, that was me. And I'm on board with that, I think. Seeing the people in their 70s or, you know, people that are decades older than me doing this sport, that to me is 10 times more inspiring than somebody winning a race. That's just my personal taste. Not that I don't care if a course record is broken or somebody, you know, wins something, but I'm more inspired by the longevity of the sport. And that's a big part of what attracts me to it as well.
Totally agree. I'm with you. I want to be able to share this. I'm a little bit behind you guys, but grandkids one day, I want to be able to run with them. That would be the dream.
So yeah, moving to you running with your grandkids, Alyssa, I'm excited about that. What's your third takeaway?
So I actually switched this around because we've kind of talked about it a bit. And I wanted to bring up this point. And I thought this was our first real guest was Jonathan Levitt, who actually has a fantastic podcast for the long run. And one of the things he brought up was talking about therapy. And he talks about this a lot in his podcast as well. It's like running isn't therapy. Therapy is therapy. And the difference that like running can be therapeutic, but it does not replace going and getting help and going and talking to someone. And I think that in many ways, ultra running tends to attract people who do have strong personality traits and, you know, in the positive and the negative. And I think it's a positive outlet in many ways. But I think that sometimes, and I'm guilty of this myself, recovering from a chronic illness, you can't really recover from chronic illness. I had a major surgery that helped me in many ways, is that I think the beginning of my ultra running career was about overcoming what happened to me. And I really could have used some darn good therapy. And I do now, and I have seen people, and all of a sudden your worth is not based in how far, how fast you can run. And that's super nice. So, yeah, that's my third one.
Yeah, I think that's phenomenal because I think so many people say, oh, this is my therapy, this is my coping mechanism. And I'm like, that's great, but that's also going to develop into another unhealthy relationship. And essentially, if somebody isn't willing to unpack why they're coping with something with running, eventually they're going to get injured, or they're going to do too much. And then what? Then they're going to be at home, and that reality is going to hit. And then that's a spiral of this, like, depression running thing. And I've seen it happen with friends. And, you know, there's this barrier when you're a coach and you see people making mistakes, but you're not their coach. I just try to keep my mouth shut. But sometimes when people use running as a coping mechanism when they're unhappy or trying to control a certain aspect of their life, it's like the silent writing on the wall, but you know it's never going to end well. And I hate seeing that as a coach and as a friend to the people that I've seen it happen to. But unfortunately, it does take awareness, and sometimes it takes an injury or two to realize that maybe your relationship with running isn't, you know, in the right balance.
Yeah, I love that. I'm actually just going to tie one of mine into what you guys just said, which will save us some time too. Because one of mine was, it offers a different way to be present, but I think you're so right that, like, it can't be how you cope. And that balance is so important. And I find, along with like a therapy practice or whatever it is that you need to cope with things and to learn how to deal with those emotions, it can be a nice supplement. And for me, I find it pretty meditative. Like, I'm on devices a lot for my work, and to just be in the forest, especially with like a technical ground where I have to be like focused just on like the dirt and the mud in front of me and not a lot else, is a really nice escape. At the same time, you don't want it to be used as an escape, right? Like you guys are saying. So I think, I guess my take on it is just that it is a really nice supplement, and it's a really nice way to slow your brain down. And there's science behind forest bathing and just being in nature and the smells and the fresh air. But like you said, we need to have other tools, or the second your run stops, you're going to be right back into spiraling. And then if you get to a place, like the other part of it is that it feels good, but it is stress on the body. So if you're stressed and then you add stress on the body, that is when injuries happen. And then you're just going to eventually implode. So yeah, I completely agree with everything that you guys said. Sorry, my husband just texted me. Is it too loud if I shower upstairs? No, you can shower. And I don't know where we're at and who wants to go next, but somebody's probably got a number three or a number four they want to get out there.
I was going to
say. Yeah, I can hop in.
Well, I was going to say, Alex, try to do three, and then we'll do like a speed round of four. And then I think we should feel very accomplished that we got four in each. So, Alex, go.
Yeah. Speed. Okay. So, people care more about the stories. No. So, I think that's been something I've learned a lot. Not so much from our podcast guest, but from the back end of running our podcast. So when I'm looking at our stats and our downloads and our listens, it's not, our biggest episodes aren't the professional runners. They're not the name brand coaches that are the most expensive and, you know, name recognizable, the people in the sport, you know, coaches. It's the stories about people overcoming struggles and living their quote unquote normal lives. And so I think if I could share anything from that with people is like, keep doing what you're doing, and you don't have to win a race to change people's lives. You don't have to have a certain body or physique or be on the cover of Ultra Runner magazine to inspire people. And I think, in reality, the people that are more normal, but they're finding their place in this sport, if you will, I hate to even say they're normal, because I think it takes more work and more effort to finish if you're going slow, especially for a longer race. But the people that are not in the top three, they're not podiuming, they're not winning, they inspire more people than they realize. And I think those inspirations are probably, if I have to say, more valuable, because when you're inspiring your coworker to give up soda and maybe go for a walk on lunch, you're saving someone's life. When you're inspiring somebody who's already an athlete to potentially overtrain to try to podium, I mean, congratulations, you won your 18th race this year. It's not that those people aren't inspirational or amazing, but I think just looking at our episode downloads, it shows to me that people care more about people's quote unquote normal lives and normal stories than they do about anything else.
Yep, 100% agree. That's always mine. And people, my guests are always like, I'm not that fast. My story's not that good. And I'm like, oh no, you're going to be the best one. And they always are. So everything you said, yeah, I co-sign.
Same. Signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. Yeah, loved it. Okay, Hillary, we're going to go speed round. Last one for you.
Okay, what did I say for my last one? Oh, I have a guest named Meredith, who is like the nicest person on the planet. And she's also super competitive. And for me, I just like that in racing, like competitive with herself and in races. And I think it's cool that in this sport, you can both be nice and you can both be competitive. And that might sound like a weird thing to have learned, but coming from like fighting and hockey and like more aggressive type sports, it was always like, I'm competitive and I got this edge and I'm a bit of an asshole. And like, don't fuck with me. And sorry, I hope I can score on your guys' podcast. And I just like that she is arguably the nicest person that I had on the podcast and is also just like a fierce competitor. And that to me is a cool thing and more intimidating than someone who is all edgy, because it just shows how comfortable they are in their own skin. And I really admire Meredith for that.
I think that's awesome. And totally echo that. I think the camaraderie aspect and like everyone being nice is the best part. Okay, my last one, and we ask if you could go for a run or have a beer or something like that with anyone in the world, who would it be? So my final one is that Michelle Obama is queen. She is our most repeated person of people wanting to run or do something with her. So Michelle Obama, shout out, you're the best. And we love you, and everyone on our podcast loves you. So, Alex, take it away.
I'm just thinking, so this means we get to go run with Michelle Obama, right? If we keep shouting her out, like she's gonna just show up like a fairy godmother.
Yes, I'm hoping. This is my plan.
Perfect.
Yes, so I'm there for that too.
My last one is, again, selfish. It's not something I've particularly learned from a one guest, but it's something I've learned getting to host this podcast, is everyone has value, which is obvious, and we wouldn't be bringing people on that we didn't think had something to offer. But something I've learned is that I usually gain the most value from the person I least expect to. So again, kind of tying back into the same thing, I learn more from the average Joe or average Jane than I do sometimes from the most elite runner or the most advanced coach, because everyone has something to offer. And I think running this podcast it's been a really good format, and I've tried to use it to allow myself to set back and really learn to listen better. And in doing that on the podcast, this like exercise of self-growth to learn to listen better, I have learned so many things. And every time I walk away, I'm like, that was my favorite podcast. And I tell my husband, I'm like, babe, this was the best one yet. And, you know, I don't know if everyone else sees all the value we get from our guests, but I really hope so.
That's super cool. I love that. And I also think like just a bonus is the friendships that you get from your guests too. Like, I would not know you guys. There's no other way. And I, like we said before the show, I definitely think we're going to end up doing some in-person adventures. And that's just so rad.
It's the coolest. Also, I think we're probably going to end up in the Pac Northwest in a year or so. So
no,
I am
way.
100% we are doing stuff. I'm so
yes.
Sick. Well, I just want to say a huge thank you to both of you. This was so much fun. I feel so energized and like excited. And I hope that all of our listeners enjoy this as much as I did.
Me too.
Same. Actually, I don't even care if they enjoyed as much as I did. If they enjoyed a third as much as I did, they're going to
like, speaking of the
fucking kills me. Can you guys both quickly just say your Instagram handles or where my listeners can find you?
Absolutely. Yes. Good call. You go, Alex.
So I am at Dr. Alex Alyx Barnett. It's a little difficult. My mom probably read too many romance novels. So AlyxBarnett on pretty much all social media, except the ones like Facebook that won't let you update your last name when you get married. So, yeah, that's probably the easiest to find me. And then we also have Coaches on the Run podcast on all social medias and obviously all podcast platforms.
Yeah, Alex is the queen of social media. She's so much better at it than I am. Mine is theory, so like theory underscore in underscore motion, MOTION. There's a story behind that, which I have yet to share, but one day I will. So, ooh. Hillary, what is yours?
My podcast is Trail Running Women, if you guys haven't heard of it. And you can find me on Instagram at hillsport55, and there's only one L in hill, and my friends make fun of me for saying that every time, but people always search it wrong, so there you have it. All right, you guys, thank you so much, and I will touch base with both of you guys so that we all release this around the same time, but again, thank you, and thank you to all of the listeners.
Thanks, everyone.